Wake up, Lo-Fi listeners. It's 8 a.m., and the world waits for no one. Lo-Fi Poli-Sci coming at you. Oh, yeah. Michael Pickering here doing our thing, talking about what's going on in the world today. Let's go fresh off that press. Lo-Fi Global News for you. An update to the latest in Afghanistan and women's rights. The Taliban have announced that women are to completely cover now, including their faces. And if women do not, then there are three steps that can take place, or that will take place. Number one, an official of the Taliban will visit the woman's male guardian or family member to talk to them. Number two, the male guardian would be summoned to a government office. And number three, the male guardian could be placed in jail for up to 3 days. So a few things here I want to talk about with this one. Number one, these punishments are all directed at male guardians instead of women themselves. And you may be wondering, why is that? Well, number two, this is the Taliban's way of making men control women's behavior within the family circle, so the Taliban doesn't have to do it themselves. And number three, if the Taliban are seriously keeping secondary school girls from going back to school because they can't decide on what uniforms to make the girls wear, then after putting this law in place, doesn't it mean they kind of should be letting the girls back to school because this law is really just a countrywide dress code and pretty all-encompassing? You know, we'll see what happens next, but if anyone out there even remotely believed the Taliban when they came back to power in August of last year, saying that they were a new Taliban and women's roles in society would be protected, well, there's no doubt now. This is all bullshit. But next, we're traveling to Northern Ireland, where the political party Sinn Féin has won some pretty important elections in the Northern Ireland Assembly, which they now say they're going to trigger a mechanism by which we could see Northern Ireland leave the United Kingdom and rejoin the country of Ireland. We're talking reunification here, people. Take a look at a map, my friends. You'll see some of the earliest signs of colonization by England in the UK. Now, on the real, does this one election mean that Northern Ireland will definitely be reunified with Ireland? No, not at all, right? There's still a lot that has to be done, and you can be sure the British government isn't going to let this happen easily. But it is the beginning of some most interesting events. I mean, Scotland a few years ago voted to leave the UK. They lost, but it was a close vote. The UK voted and narrowly decided to leave the EU. Now Northern Ireland? Politics in the UK, jeez, always something going down over there. But in other big elections going down around the world, the Philippines have their presidential elections today, people. And President Duterte is finally going to be gone. But that doesn't mean we'll get someone better. Eyes open. And Lebanon is also kicking off national elections for their citizens that are abroad. And the physical elections inside the country take place on May 15th, just 1 week away. Extremely important elections here for the country of Lebanon. Eyes open, Lo-Fi listeners. We'll be talking about both of these countries and their elections very, very soon. Okay, now let's take a breath. Let's breathe. And let's go. The U.S. Supreme Court had documents leaked that showed the justices were likely to make a decision in an upcoming court case that would overturn Roe v. Wade, 1973, and undo abortion being legal at the federal level and send it back to the states. The Supreme Court has officially stated that this document, or these documents, are authentic. But they've also said that it does not represent the court's final opinion on the case. Take from that what you will. We're just going to go with, this is going to happen this summer. With a 6-3 conservative strong Supreme Court, you know it. Which means, this summer, women across the country will lose their right to choose in many states. The Supreme Court is going to single-handedly take away the rights of American citizens. The least democratic American political institution is going to take away women's rights. This is bullshit. This is complete bullshit. This is religion and politics hiding behind one word that characterizes so much of the U.S. legal system. Federalism. The distribution of power between the federal government and the state's governments. Federalism. We'll come back to that. But federalism is the basic reasoning used in the leaked documents, that states should make the decision, not the federal government. At least that's what we can tell from these documents. But let's focus on a question I've been getting from a lot of you out there lately. What can you do about it? And that is what we're going to focus on today. What can you do about any of this? We're going to break it down from the highest level of the federal government to the lowest level of your local government, and everything in between. So let's start with the Supreme Court itself. Like I said, this is the least democratic American political institution in the entire structure of the U.S. government. Now, what does that mean? It means it doesn't have to be transparent about its actions, and it's not elected, and therefore not accountable to U.S. citizens and voters. They can do whatever they want, and there's nothing we can do about it. But, question, can Supreme Court justices be removed from office? Answer, yes. They can be impeached, just like any other federal office holder, like the President of the United States, for high crimes and misdemeanors. However, that's extremely unlikely, and they can't be impeached for ruling on a court case like this. And because of that, you know, the Supreme Court isn't just the least democratic American political institution. They're also the most insulated and difficult to remove from office. So this means kicking out the justices, not a viable option. So now let's move to other options at the federal level of government. What about, and one of the hot topics of the day, question. Can Congress pass a federal law legalizing abortion? Answer, yes. The issue here is, though, with the votes needed to pass in the Senate, which is 60 votes, and the Democrats don't have it. Simple as that. Even stretching across the aisle, it's simply not there. So even though the House would pass it and the president would sign it, the Senate couldn't pass it. And that's because of the filibuster rule in the Senate, which we'll come back to in a second. But question, isn't there a way for the Senate to pass a bill with only 51 votes? Answer, yes, it's the budget reconciliation process. However, the parliamentarian would likely not allow a law on abortion to be viewed as applicable under the process because budget reconciliation bills have to be directly related to the budget and spending in the federal government. I don't see this as a viable option, though, and neither do Democrats, which is why you really aren't hearing much about this at the moment. Next question. Can the Democrats get rid of the filibuster and then pass the bill with the help of the Vice President, Vice President Harris, breaking the tie in the Senate and making a 51-50 vote, and thereby passing abortion at the federal level of government? Answer? Yes, they could. However, doing this would have far-reaching implications for our political system in the immediate future, as well as all time. Because this would mean that in any policy area, once a political party has a majority in Congress and the presidency, they could easily undo everything they want and write all new laws that they do want. It takes the U.S. out of being a slow-moving political system to a fast-paced system. And when you look at the distribution of states as far as red and blue, you see how difficult it is for the Democrats to control the Senate. Which means they know if they do this, they could screw up a lot of other things. Like, finally, we could see the complete undoing of the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare. This is scary territory for both political parties, because then the rules of the game change drastically. And what happened next? Wow, it's a bit of a question mark for everyone. So I don't think this is necessarily an option that the Democrats really want to go down with. Now, let's say Congress and the President pass a federal bill legalizing abortion. Can the Supreme Court rule that new law unconstitutional? Answer, yes. First, the new law would have to be challenged all the way up to the Supreme Court before they could even decide if they are going to hear it or not. But that new law would be challenged all the way up, and the Supreme Court would likely hear that case. And then, because of the Supreme Court's reasoning in this leaked document, they would likely follow the same reasoning and strike down that new law as unconstitutional due to taking away states' rights and being against the institution of federalism as laid out by the Constitution. So any bill passed at the federal level would have to consider this and be written in a very precise manner to try and limit the probability of this happening. Well then, next question. Can we amend the Constitution? And the answer? Yes, of course we can. And there's at least two significant things that could be done here in this process. Firstly, you could rewrite how long justices serve on the Supreme Court and decrease their insulation from the public. The Senate, for instance, was not always elected by the people. They were originally elected by state legislators. But we, as a country, changed that in 1913 with the passing of the 17th Amendment. So we could rewrite how justices serve on the court. And this would have major effects on how the flow of the political lean of the court goes for any amount of time. We could also pass a constitutional amendment legalizing abortion. Which brings us to our next question. How do we amend the Constitution? Our answer? You either start with Congress, or you start with the states. If you start with Congress, you need 2/3 vote in both houses. That's about 66 votes in the Senate. You'll never get that. And the filibuster doesn't even matter here. Full stop. So amending the Constitution starting in Congress goes nowhere fast. The other way, 2/3 of state legislatures, about 34 states, they can call on Congress to have a constitutional convention. And then it goes back to be passed by 3/4 of the states, which is about 38 states. Out of these two options for writing a constitutional amendment, starting with the states is the most feasible. But the numbers, well, that's hard to reach. 34-ish just to start the process and 38-ish just to finish it. Could it be done? Yeah, it could be. I think there's actually a better chance of getting judicial reform to the Supreme Court, though, via this process, perhaps, than amending the Constitution to guarantee legal abortion rights. But both could be done at the federal level. But to do that, you have a lot of work to do at the state and local levels, which we'll come back to in just a bit. But along these same lines, as far as process, next question. Could you take away the Supreme Court's ability to rule laws unconstitutional? Answer? Yes, in much the same fashion. And interestingly enough here, judicial review is not in the Constitution. Thereby, you could amend the Constitution to say that the courts don't have this power and thereby never should have had this power. You could even pass a law through Congress to do this. You see, the Supreme Court took this power itself in 1803 in Mulberry v. Madison. The federal government just never enacted a check on judicial power since this happened. However, if you did this, you pave the way for some pretty important court decisions to have never happened, and thereby, potentially future court decisions will never happen. For instance, Brown v. Board of Education, which ruled segregation illegal and unconstitutional and ended segregation, was a Supreme Court decision, not an act of Congress, in 1954. The only reason same-sex marriage is legal in the entire country is because the Supreme Court ruled a series of cases and ultimately the Defense of Marriage Act unconstitutional. And thus, same-sex marriage became legal countrywide. It was not an act of Congress that did this. So already, from just a few of these possible choices we've talked about so far, you can see, depending on which you go with, it could have major ramifications on the country into the future, as well as the present. Now the next thing, and really the last thing that could be done about all of this at the federal level, or rather the last thing I'm going to talk about here before we move on to the state level, is the future appointments of Supreme Court justices. You could see in the future, as current justices retire, new, more liberal-leaning justices appointed, and then another law challenged, and then the reinstatement of Roe v. Wade. Two things about this. One, you could be waiting a while. The court has a 6-3 lean right now. And number two, not only would you be waiting a while, you'd also have to make sure you have a liberal president and a liberal majority in the Senate for this option to even matter. And that gets into elections and the state-level options on the abortion issue. So we're going to break this section down into state level that goes to Washington, D.C., meaning your U.S. senators, U.S. representatives at the federal level, and then your local state legislatures, your state senators and state representatives that work in state governments. They mirror each other for a small portion of this, but let's start with senators and representatives that go to D.C. For almost any of the previously mentioned methods to work, you need to work a majority in the Senate and a majority in the House. The majority in the House is easier to get to and happens more regularly, and therefore, let's focus on the Senate. Now, because of the way the population is split across the country, it's difficult for Democrats to get a working majority in the Senate. Simple as that. Each state gets two senators, regardless of population, and we're not even going to go down the route of, could you change this? Yes, you theoretically could, but it's highly, highly, highly unlikely, and it would just never happen. So, how to get a working majority of people in the U.S. Senate that would pass laws or implement legislation that would lead to protecting abortion rights? Voting. You guessed it. But let's be clear about this. Voting in states that are either purple or red. Blue states, yeah, you have to work to keep your states blue, but that's far easier than turning a purple state or even a red state into a blue state. You have to gain seats, not just keep the ones you have. And then, once you gain those seats, well, then you have to keep them too. And now, we're talking the ideological distribution of voters across the 50 states. So, I've been hearing a lot of statistics talked about saying that the majority of U.S. voters approve of legalized abortion in at least most cases. So to be sure, I looked up at some of the latest statistics from Pew Research data and found an article just a few days ago that was done. It says about 61% of adults across the country do in fact hold this belief. And without digging deeper, I suspect that this number is pretty accurate. What is less known, but I think pretty obvious and directly related to the issue of the Senate, is where those 61% of Americans live. You see, if those 61% of Americans live in mostly blue states, it means that red states are likely overwhelmingly majority anti-abortion populations, which is connected to a related issue, the flight of the liberals. How many of you out there ever had friends or known anyone, or maybe even yourself, have moved from a place that was ideologically conservative to a more liberal place? Because it's more in tune with your lifestyle and your beliefs, and you feel freer to be who you are because of it. Yeah, you know this story. You've heard it before. Time and time again. Liberals leaving conservative states because they are conservative states. This has a direct effect on the ideological distribution of red states and makes them more red, while also making blue states more blue. Now, as far as the House of Representatives goes, this doesn't matter because redistricting of the 435 seats in the House is done via population, so those districts move where the people move. But in a Senate, where every state has two seats, the flight of the liberals creates ideological strongholds. And that, my friends, is a challenging thing to overcome. But you don't have to win all the Senate seats, just the working majority. So the question, how do you do it? The answer? Canvassing. Campaigning. And in particular, door-to-door conversations and get-out-the-vote campaigns. You have to talk to people in person to have the highest likelihood of getting them to vote, as well as getting them to care about your particular issue. Hashtag activism only works so much, especially in an era where we create our own echo chambers and social media bubbles. In many cases, we're preaching to the choir. And a lot of non-engaged voters, they've insulated themselves from political messages online. And it's actually quite easy to do, but I'm not going to go into it here. The point is, you have to branch out. You know, political campaigns canvas, make phone calls, because we know that these ways produce the highest likelihood of mobilizing the voter base into action. Asking someone in person to vote has a really strong effect on if that person actually does go to vote. And we have a ton of research to show that. And sitting down with someone, talking to them about an issue, has the most profound effect on people. Tons of research on that, too. Now, all of this holds true going into potentially one of the biggest ways people are looking for change with the upcoming ruling this summer by the Supreme Court. And that's moving us into state legislatures. You see, if all else fails at the federal level, because you can't get around the Supreme Court ruling everything unconstitutional, meaning even new laws passed by the federal government, even if you are able to get a working majority in Congress and the president, and they do make laws protecting abortion, you still have to overcome the Supreme Court ruling that new law unconstitutional. And if you can't do that, if federalism holds strong, then you have to go to state legislatures. And all the conversation about getting out the vote matters here too. And in extremely important ways, because a lot of states do not hold their local elections during presidential elections or even midterm elections. And voter turnout rates in off-year elections are ridiculously low. You have to change that. You canvass, you door knock, you phone call, you talk to people, and you create political change. Now let's bring all of this together and see, what do we really have here? You know, there are multiple, if not many, ways to create change that we've gone over here. And lots of people would say we should try them all, go all in, and hope at least one of them works out. No. Straight up, no. Because doing that spreads your resources across all these different efforts and possibilities, and it assumes that all of them have the same probability of success. No. They do not. And your resources are not unlimited. Be real with yourself. You, as a person listening to me right now, you only have so much time in your day. I'd say the most effective avenues we've discussed today would be focusing on state and local Get Out the Vote campaigns. And you start here, and you could protect women's rights at a state level and build up a national coalition to get that working majority needed to protect at the federal level. The states are incredibly important in every avenue we've discussed here today. And in fact, they are the only factor that is important in every avenue of protecting women's rights that we've talked about. In each and every single option for protecting women's rights, the states play a crucial role in it. There's no getting around it. You have to get out the vote. Canvass, campaign, door knock, phone calls. You have to talk to people. And you know, using hashtag activism is fine. It's important in keeping people motivated and connected so that they can and do go out and talk to people. But hashtag activism on its own is not enough. You have to reach people outside of that. You have to reach people where they are. And there you have it, the blueprint that honestly, almost all of you already really knew. But this is a bit of a double-edged sword, right? And really, this happens on all major research areas for political scientists. And that is, anytime we tell people how to create political change, it means by default, we're telling everyone how to do so. So if you want to protect women's rights, you have to do it better than those looking to take them away. Because you are all fully aware that anti-abortion voters and politicians have been waiting for this. And if it happens this summer, they are going to try and keep you from changing it. I mean, that's democracy, right? A multi-party system that takes turns governing to keep government from enacting tyranny and all that, right? But just remember, democracy is about checks and balances. And if you don't like the balance, then you better check it. Because no one is going to do it for you.